Welcome today to our podcast. I'm thrilled to have with us two really interesting people who have joined us from Orenda Education. We have Dr. Robin Avalar-LaSalle and we have Scott McGuire, both of whom are going to be joining me in a conversation that I think everybody's going to find interesting about putting your equity foot forward. So before we get into the conversation, I'm going to hand it over to both of you, Robin and Scott. If you could just introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what makes you passionate about this topic.
Okay. Well, I'll start. This is Robin, and thank you, Padgett, for inviting us. We're so excited to be with you today to talk about something that is super, super important always, but especially right now. I have a history of being an elementary school instructional assistant, a teacher, a principal, a district office administrator, a professor at the university, and then for the last 24 years, or almost five now, the founder and CEO of Orenda Education. And we are an organization that now is a team, other than just myself, the way we started, that believes that every child, every single child deserves the premium education that only some currently receive. And we've amassed this team of amazing equity warriors, one of whom is with us today, and I'll just kick it over to Scott.
Hey, thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure. Robin, great to see you. Padgett, pleasure. Thank you so much. Again, my name is Scott McGuire. I'm Senior Director of Ed Services for Orenda Education. A little bit of my background, again, similar to Robin, elementary school teacher and middle school, site administrator, resource teacher, any district PD professional, any hat within the district, we pretty much wore it. I did have the luxury of meeting the Orenda team as a elementary school principal and going through that equity work from the school side of things, not as an Orenda team member, but as a district school leader, and really getting to see and feel and live the equity warrior work that is so vital. And I think that's what I'm most excited to be able to share with the thought partners that we have in our work with Orenda.
Super. Thank you, Scott. And thank you, Robin. I think between the two of you, the amount of experience from all aspects of K-12 education, we've got it covered here. So that's awesome. As I said, what we're going to be discussing today is what you all describe as leading with our equity foot forward. So I think I want to just kick it off with, first of all, fabulously interesting concept. But what does that mean to lead with your equity foot forward? Robin, do you want to start that? Or?
Yeah, sure. I'll just say, I'm going to set it up by saying that because of the pandemic, right now we are leading with our safety foot forward, health and safety. And I'm going to ask Scott to describe why we're not dismissing the need for safety, but why we're trying so hard to message the need to lead as educators and community members with our equity foot forward in education.
Yeah, no, it's such a pivotal time. I mean, and I know I'm sort of preaching to the choir, but so many of the current approaches to either returning to school or managing a hybrid program or just imagining what schooling looks like in this environment has, because of necessity, really leaned on the operations and facilities and safety and those kind of concerns. And those are paramount concerns, right? They're super important. And if my children or if my students that I'm in charge of aren't safe first, then by all means, I mean, that's paramount. But I think we are in an interesting time where we have the opportunity to kind of flip the system on its ear from an instructional perspective. So long we've tried to find the space and the time to differentiate instruction, right? To take that kind of traditional schooling model that is largely whole group and find these little niches to where we can make sure that our students that are that have the most need or are the most currently vulnerable get exactly what they need, when they need, and how they need it. But it's always felt like an add-on or an addition or in lieu of something else. Mm-hmm. And now with the kind of freedoms, you know, freedoms of a, I don't want to call it a broken structure,
but, uh-huh.
Right, but there are now more opportunities to kind of change what schooling looks like as we go forward because of the current distance learning and the things that we've gone through in the past, you know, 12 to 14 months. So to me, that's it's an exciting place to be if we are thinking as equity leaders, as we're taking that first step to what does that even mean or look like?
You know, and simply stated, what it looks like is there is a real risk right now and a great opportunity, but the risk is that our concern for basic needs, health, safety, ventilation systems, distance in the classrooms, testing for adults, etc. That's necessary, but it's not sufficient. Not to get to the 20 million kids in the United States who are below the achievement expectations. And so the problem is that where we are right now could petrify. I don't mean scared petrify. I mean, could become so solid that we get stuck there. And that's really primarily what's taking up the oxygen right now. And what we're trying to do is to say, of course, we have to do that. Let's do that. And then let's remember that's a means to an end. And the end is to get an educational system to be equitable, to make sure that every child gets what they need when they need it, so that when they graduate from our school system, they are eligible to go to college or choose any post high school option available to anybody, no matter where they live, no matter what their background. Well, that's what we mean by leading with our equity foot forward.
And you just mentioned, Robin, 20 million.
Yeah. And I'll say that there's about 60 million students in the United States, and 20 million, and that's a number before the pandemic.
Do you think that has, I mean, I guess we don't know exactly, but.
The estimates are that students of color, poor students, working class families, other vulnerable populations have lost as much as a year during
right.
this time, you know, half a year to a year. And interestingly, the opposite is true for students who come from families of means. They've actually, by some estimates, grown more than what they would have had they been in traditional school. Isn't that interesting? Which
yeah.
means that when we come back to school, not only will the have-nots be there, the divide between them, the gap between them, will be even greater than when we left it, making the need for us to be ever present when looking forward and envisioning and creating the world that we need to be, which is different from what we left, actually better than what we left for all kids.
Interesting. So, I mean, there's a positive side to the whole thing, in that we could, if we could figure this out, move the needle and yeah. change so that it is more positive for more kids in, you know, the mm-hmm. full sum of kids in the country because of this. It's sort
Absolutely.
Of a, maybe a sort of a crazy catalyst, but.
It's true. Absolutely. Right? Padgett, we've been moving toward more equitable schooling. I mean, the gap was discovered, you know, officially in 1960s with the Coleman Report, but we know it's been there since, you know, as long as schools have existed in the country. And closing that gap has been the exception, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are either going to have a system that perpetuates and actually is exacerbating that gap, or we seize this moment to accelerate what felt like moving a mountain before, a little millimeter at a time. But now we've had to rethink everything. So, you know, either we go back to our old normal and start all over where we left off, which wasn't great for about a third of the students. And worse than that, the same kinds of students over and over again. We're creating this or perpetuating this underclass, which is absolutely not necessary. Or we lead with our equity foot forward, and this becomes a historic time to create world-class education for every student in the country and become the model for the world. And it's possible.
Well, that would be awesome. I mean, it's like there's a call to action now to,
yes, ma'am,
to do this. So thinking about that, you know, there are so many districts and schools that do just want to get back to what you know, quote unquote, the normal, whether it's the old normal or the new normal, and go back to the, you know, possibly going back to the way the things were before the pandemic or moving it forward. What would you say are some of the things that districts should be thinking about doing differently now that we do have this opportunity to lead with our equity foot forward in this return to school?
Something that's really interesting is that in instructional time has always been precious, right? That's one thing you can't invent is more school hours. And so the efficiencies of what happens within the confines of the school day have really been magnified as schools are, one, via distance, and then two is this kind of middle phase of a hybrid where it's half on, half off, some of this, some of that. And I feel like that hybrid scenario is going to be with us, at least in structure, for a little while. So when you think about that, leveraging that time with the teacher is crucial. And it's most crucial for the students who need it the most, our most vulnerable students. So trying to find ways to make sure every student gets what they need, but in particular, the most vulnerable students, the ones that need the teacher the most, get the teacher the most, knowing that potentially the quote unquote meat on the bone of instructional time isn't quite as, might not be as robust as it was back in a traditional 6.5-7 hour school day where they are all in front of you at one time. And so that's leveraging asynchronous instruction, right? That's taking a look at what are we asking students to do away from the teacher so that those that can do, and they get a preview or a review or a deep dive or a tickle into what the content is coming. But then we take a look at the actual teacher's synchronous time with students and say, okay, so now how do we support students who need me more right now that might not have been, the asynchronous time may not have been sufficient for them. And it's really kind of figuring out, and it's organic to this classroom, to a site, to a district, figuring out what those tolerances are, figuring out what those most vulnerable groups are, because they do vary by district, and then trying to accentuate the time with teacher so that it is as efficient and as dynamic as possible.
It's like this, an example of that, what Scott's talking about. We have always worried about educators, parents, community, that our class sizes are big. And it's so you end up teaching to the middle and you end up losing sleep over both the students that need to be accelerated and the students who are already doing very well, who are under accelerated, who are under enriched. And what we know from the literature is that small group instruction is the way to go. If a student is needing anything other than the one size fits all lesson, which is very few in a class can meet, have their needs met just in that setting. But anybody who's on the outer edges, which is in some cases, a whole class is on one outer edge or another, small group instruction is the way to go. Well, lo and behold, we can't have 35 kids in a class right now, and we probably won't be able to do that for a while. Whether we accept the 6 feet distance between kids for distance, or whether we accept the 3 feet, which in some states have been modified to, it still means fewer kids in a class. Now, what we've learned from class size reduction experiences before is that reducing the number of kids in the class doesn't necessarily mean you get better outcomes for kids, not unless you change your methodology.
Nice.
If you do round robin reading with 35 kids and then now you have 18 and you do round robin reading, you're not going to get better outcomes. So because of the pressures of the pandemic, we can say, let's have some kids at home and some kids at school and really do our best with those who are not in front of us in order to, for safety reasons, have a small class. Or we can lead with our equity foot forward and say, you know what, by design, everything that's going to be whole group is going to be online and kids are going to access it independently or with a coach. That can be a paraprofessional. It can be a parent volunteer. It can be an after-school support person if they need support accessing the material that the asynchronous material that Scott was talking about. Classroom time is going to be workshop time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we will always have a small group only, that those kids with the teacher will be doing guided practice. It kind of flips instruction on its head. And therefore, what we've always wanted smaller teacher student ratios. We've always wanted help for the teacher. If we lead with our equity foot forward, we can see that the things that we have because of safety can actually be magic. It could actually be the part of the holy grail we've always been asking for. And then on the other side, when the kids are not with the teacher, they can be at home doing asynchronous work, but they don't have to be. We can set up a portable structure somewhere on campus where the kids who are not with the teacher are with the assistant and they're doing, they're streaming the classroom, which is what we're doing now, but the kids are at home. They can be on campus though, with an assistant there who's connected to the teacher, where they've done their whole group work with an assistant, and now they're getting the level of support that they need to extend and enrich the information, which we haven't really been good at. Honestly, we have not been good at stretching kids who, you know, we have an under-challenged population as well. So that's the idea, that we can capitalize on what we had to do because of safety, which included the technology, it includes smaller sizes, it includes having assistance, and we can reframe it with our equity foot forward and have a more true, right, and just education system for kids, no matter where they are on the spectrum, so that everyone is, where the floor is at least grade level and well-being,
mm-hmm.
healthy, social and emotional, state.
Yeah.
For adults and children.
Right. So you're safe. You're getting the floors, the grade level instruction. That's a very, you know, that's sort of the bar, the low bar that we should be working towards.
I'd say the other part about that is really finding ways to leverage other partners that are on campus. You know, many districts, many schools have after school partners. You name the organization. When there's synergy between what's going on in the school day and those partners that are providing either before school, after school, or enrichment, when those entities are all rowing in the same direction, it's unstoppable, and it really gets me excited to think about how can partners that provide after school programs, how can they be more closely tied to support students in either asynchronous, or how can they be a preview or review to the teacher workshop that's going to happen within the confines of that really sacred instructional time on campus. The possibilities are almost endless in terms of leveraging that support. But what it does take is it takes planning, right? It takes some forethought. It takes some openness, because that may not necessarily have been the lay of the land pre-pandemic. And so really being able to open your mind to how do we support students in the most robust way possible, using every last resource that we have available to us. Scott. District resource, community resource, after school programs, all of the above need to be in lock and step so that we can really leverage and make sure that those students who may be experiencing achievement gaps, that doesn't have to be inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. That is something that we can work through together.
So that's a great example, Scott, of right now, there's a lot of money, including federal money. And one of the biggest priority areas is expanded learning time, which really means our after-school partners who have been an appendage up until now. For safety reasons, we need to have kids supervised in extended time and taken care of. If we lead with our safety foot forward, that's what they are. They're supervising. If we lead with our equity foot forward, they're aligned to the core day. And part of what they do is to add another layer, another tier of support to kids who need it, whether it's to extend what they know or whether it is to fill the gap. So just, if you put on your equity glasses, everything that we're doing for safety reasons almost can be turned around and capitalized on. We can say, oh, that's good for health. Well, great. In addition, if we do it right, we can actually get to those 20 million kids. It doesn't have to be that the same kids over and over and over are behind in the same communities, in the same cities, in the same circumstances. We have so many examples where that's not the case. It's time to make those not the exception by design.
Right. And I'm hearing both of you talk about the importance of this work being not just the responsibility of the school district, that it goes beyond that, right? I mean, with the community and the after school programs or whatever the different programs may be, they're, you know, in lockstep with the school districts and the families to try to get these kids the best education in the safest environment as possible. And like you say, it's been a little bit more of that whole connection's a little bit more, not as connected, but more of an appendage previously. So maybe this is a moment in time to change those relationships for the better.
It really can be the solution. Scott was talking about after school providers. He actually leads a project here in Linwood, California, which is right next to Compton. Some people, you know, have heard of Compton, may not have heard of Linwood, but it's a, you know, very working class, very you know, historically struggling neighborhood economically. But Orinda and Think Together partner. And so those kids get from before school, you know, in the middle of the day, extra support while the teachers are planning, because this requires planning. Kids are getting enrichment from our after school partners, because what's after school now? Who knows when school ends? That's a dotted line now. And then after school, they get a preview or review of the same academic material, but taught in a different way, plus enrichment, robotics and STEM, science and technology, engineering and math extensions. And I mean, it really makes a complete difference. That district, for example, went from an 18% university eligibility rate to now over 50%, which is over the state average for all kids, not kids from that community, that neighborhood with those demographics. It's the other thing you said about the community is really important, in that we say that the work that we do involves TLNC. And while we're loving people and all that, quack, 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 what we really mean is T is the teaching part. And that's what we've been talking about right now, leading with our equity foot forward with regard to powerful teaching and learning. L is leadership. And so teachers by themselves are not the solution. They're not the problem. They're one piece. Leadership needs to be visionary and on board and pushing the pressure to be petrified and stalled out at the safety conversation. And then C is actually counseling. And what we mean by the C is counseling and all support services. So Scott, can you talk a little bit, this is fascinating, because you just said we need more than the classroom teacher in this solution. And we don't look actually too far beyond the classroom or the school grounds. What we like to be is a community place where the community comes in. But Scott, talk about how we incorporate the C in this solution that's required now because of COVID?
Yeah, well, no doubt the C in terms of counseling, you're really talking about that big umbrella of student support services and all of the things that entails. Some of that's SEL, right? Making sure that students are and teaching staff and the community are well, that they have the that they're okay, right? That they're ready to move forward and they feel supported, and that if there are other entities that are needed or there are supports that are needed, that those are made available to them. But then you think about from a school counseling perspective, in terms of what supports do students need to stay on track? What supports do families need to be informed of in the midst of all of this? A through G requirements don't go away, right? Scheduling doesn't go away. There may be things that happen because of safety concerns around, a student's schedule or a group of students' schedules. And all of those things come under that kind of counseling umbrella in terms of student support services. So whether it's through the guidance team, whether it's through school site social workers or those type of support staff, is that making sure that the student as a whole is supported and that there is a plan that is inclusive of both the academic side and the student support services side that are also working in tandem to make sure that students are not just successful, but supported in their journey toward academic achievement. Because at the end of this this cohort that is coming through, there will not be less requirements for them. There will not be there should not be less expectations for them. But the expectation is that the leaders, the counselors, teachers have to be active members of this kind of support team to make sure that when students reach the end of that journey, that they reach there with options and they reach it successfully, so that they may go to college right away. But you know what? If they don't, 3 years from now, they can choose to go to college when they decide it's ready for them. But that they have that option, that they have that choice, and that choice comes from a lot of adult supports along the way, making sure that students are supported in their journey toward academic and career readiness.
Padgett, this is another one where counseling and some schools have a whole staff, trauma-informed specialists, and there's a whole staff worth of people, specialists designed to help students who truthfully have also been an appendage. Students in crisis, and we'll send them to a specialist. But they haven't in most places been an integral part of the students' lives. Counseling has been relegated primarily to secondary schools and primarily to programming kids. But because of COVID, because of the pandemic, and because of the shutdown, we know that there's trauma. We know that reports of child abuse have gone down during this time, but child abuse has gone up.
Absolutely.
And there's data for that. We know that high school girls especially are at huge risk of academic failure because they've had to stay home in certain neighborhoods while their parents go to work and take care of kids. In other countries and in some states where these kind of school shutdowns have happened, teen pregnancy has gone up. There's less supervision. There's, there's all kinds of stuff in all neighborhoods. There's drug and alcohol abuse patterns change. So now we have a lot of attention to the trauma that students and families have faced through, lack of food insecurity and housing insecurity, that we didn't really have before except for very much exceptional situations. So if we lead with our safety foot forward, all this attention will kind of diminish as soon as kids get back on campus. But if we lead with our equity foot forward, then this can become a permanent part of the fabric of this solution, which is, wrap your arms around a student and their families. And say this, first of all, what's the floor? and the floor is grade level, nothing less, period. You expect it, you support it, you design for it, you backward map to it. And then the second most important question is, so under what conditions would that be true?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever the conditions are, we make them be. The teachers have conditions that they need to meet, that they have to have in classrooms for this to work. The leaders need to have and create conditions, and counselors and support services need to create conditions. And together, that trilogy can move us into a phase in education where what we have right now is really called history. In the past, we used to have inequitable education. In the past, it was inevitable that certain kids didn't make it and other kids did. Wow, you know, imagine a time 20, 30, 40 years forward where that's in a history book, not in a current events book. Let that be, let that be.
Well, that's a great thought. And yes, let's aim for that. Let's be able to look back on this time and be able to say that. I mean, and just to mirror some of the things you were saying, both of you, at Gaggle, you know, we're keeping, we're like a safety net to try to catch the kids who are struggling, whether that be with thinking about self-harm or violence towards others, drugs and alcohol, and just in the pandemic. So measuring the last 12 months, we've seen a significant increase in issues with, you know, students thinking about serious self-harm, you know, over 30% increase year over year, over 70% increase in child pornography and that sort of thing. I mean, it's just across the board been such a tough year. So to your point, Scott, the whole, you talked about this cohort going forward. I mean, this cohort has really had a tough time. And so it's, you know, it's setting that floor, grade level and happy and healthy and safe, but also like you were saying with the TLC, the counseling piece is helping the kids that have had these difficulties move forward in their lives and have positive lives. So I just think it's, you know, it's up to all of us across the board, and whether you're in a K-12 district, whether you work in an after-school program, whether you're a parent, whatever your role, there's got to be some contribution that you can make to try to help this group move forward, and then also help the following groups with having a better educational system that is providing a more equitable base of learning for everybody. So,
and Padgett, what you bring up is, and I know you use the word, you know, we talk about systems, you know, this active engagement of supporting students through, whether it's through academics or whether it's through socio-emotional learning or just awareness, it's not passive. It has to be active. And so you have to, you don't want to discover students in distress after they're in distress. We want to make sure that we are doing everything in our power to look at those local indicators and to look at some sort of metrics to decide and to tier kids based on how vulnerable are they right now. Because we know for sure that vulnerability is going to change over time. The student that is vulnerable in quarter one may not be that same vulnerable kid in quarter three, and vice versa. And if we're not taking that kind of active role and have systems to really check in with students, with families, then we'll be left almost in the same kind of predicament, is that we'll be there just receiving kids in crisis rather than seeking them out pre-crisis to leverage the resources that we have in terms of support. So really it's an active call to action. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we think about it, about helping students have great lives. In other words, catching them before they're necessarily having a massive crisis and getting them the help they need when they need it, as opposed to difficult lives because they didn't get the help they need when they needed it. So yes, to your point. So we're kind of coming to the end of our time. I'm wondering if each of you could maybe give us one takeaway that you would want the listeners of this podcast to leave with. So I'll start with you, Scott. Do you have a particular takeaway you'd like to offer?
Yeah, I think the so much of the academic and counseling input and stressors have been placed on the shoulders of actual teachers and counselors, and they've done an amazing job of stewarding our students and our own children right through this unprecedented time. But the solutions and the supports really come from a systems perspective. So being able to look at the system as a whole and being able to, like I said before, kind of get at all of the parts of the system rowing in the same direction of student wellness, academic achievement, and making sure that no one is left behind. It can't fall on just the teachers and counselors. It's going to take equity champions at the district level that have the vision and the desire to really affect their system, and that can't be passive. So the inspirational piece of go get them, and we say you don't go looking for trouble, you go looking for good trouble, right? There will be students out there that aren't getting their due at any given point. So leverage your equity muscle and get out there and figure it out, right? The future is not written. We have it right in front of us to influence.
Oh, excellent. What about you, Robin?
Well, this has been such a great conversation, and Padgett, thank you, and thank Gaggle for all the work that you do. Connecting us has been an amazing experience, because we realize there are lots of people working on the same thing in silos. And what Scott said is so true. If we come together and create a system solution, we can magnify the outcomes for kids. So thank you. My final thought is just that this can either have been the worst time in the world educationally, or it can have been the pivot point. And the difference will be whether or not we stop at the safety concerns, or whether or not we put our equity glasses on and we lead with our equity foot forward and check everything that we do against the ultimate goal, which is for kids, all kids, to get that premium education that historically only some have enjoyed.
Well, that's a great thought to end with. I think thank you both very much for your contributions. I think this has been an excellent conversation. I encourage listeners to go to the Gaggle website and look at our resources tab, where we have a webinar that we did back, and I think it was in January, with Robin and her team and some superintendents specifically on the topic of equity. So definitely check that out. That's another great resource for everybody. And you know, certainly listen to some other of our Gaggle podcasts, which we call It Takes a Village. So right on theme for today's conversation. So again, thank you both very much. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.